Okay, good afternoon. Welcome, everybody. Thank you for sticking it out to the bitter end, hopefully not so bitter, for the last session. I'd like to thank our sponsor for the session and say that the shir is Le'ilu Nishmat Yafet Chai Ben Said Salah Halevi. Should be an aliyah for the neshama. Please God, we should learn some good Torah for a schus and much appreciation for that. We are talking about the Shulchan Aruch. It's a, as you'll see from the source sheet, it's a very text-intensive source sheet. There aren't that many sources, there are only 10 sources, but we're going to have to read a lot of Hebrew. I'm going to read it quite quickly, translate most of it, but it's going to be a kind of a fast ride through Gallup through some of these issues. What I want to look at is, I think, very important, which is to try and identify the role of the Shulchan Aruch. People talk about it all the time. Shulchan Aruch says this, Shulchan Aruch says that. But actually, the reaction to the Shulchan Aruch was quite mixed in many ways. Maybe on the negative side, both with the Ashkenazim and also some of the Sfaradim. And actually, what's happened to the Shulchan Aruch in the 500 years since it was written is it's been de-Shulchan Aruchified. In a way which is actually very, very important, and it's given rise to other Sfarim as well. So we're going to see that right now. Let me give you a little bit of historical context. Rav Yosef Caro was born in 1488 in Spain. He left Spain when they were expelled in 1492. He went to Portugal probably for a while, ended up leaving Portugal as well, spent a lot of his youth in the Turkey, Ottoman Empire and Salonika around there. He became very closely connected with a group of very interesting young Kabbalists. Rav Moshe Cordovero was connected later to that group, but certainly Rav Shlomo Halevi Alkabetz, of course, who composed Lecha Dodi and a lot more than that besides, was a very close friend of Rav Yosef Caro. They were very influenced by the episode of Shlomo Molcho, who was a sort of Messiah figure. It wasn't quite a Messiah figure, who was burnt at the stake. There was a lot going on. It was a very exciting time. The expulsion from Spain was a cataclysm. Was unthinkable, but the unthinkable happened, and that had reverberations through the entire Sephardic world, and to some degree, north of, in Europe as well. And then the Ottoman Empire capturing Eretz Israel in 1516, 1517, and a lot of those Jews from Spain had gone to the Ottoman Empire. The Ottoman Empire had opened its doors to the Jews. It said the King of Spain must be out of his mind, throwing these people out. They've got money, connections, talent, brains, and the Ottomans brought them in with a lot of enthusiasm. And then when the Ottomans invaded Eretz Israel, so the Jews were able to kind of follow in, and they felt this was really the beginning of a messianic era, that they just encountered and experienced Gog and Magog, the kind of the cataclysm of the expulsion, and now they were able to return, and they founded cities like Sfat, which grew enormously under their influence. And while the Rav Yosef Caro was still in Turkey, he came up with a very important idea, which was to start creating a new sefer called the Bet Yosef, which also spawned the Shulchan Aruch. And what we're going to do now is we're going to look in number one, which is the biggest source on the sheet, at a selection from his introduction to the Bet Yosef. We'll see what he says, and you'll get a feel for what he's trying to achieve. So let's start. I should have numbered the paragraphs. There are 9 paragraphs here. We'll go through most of them. Vehiki aruchu lanu hayamim. We've been poured from one kli to the next kli. We've been thrown out from this place to this place. That's his life. Chucked out from here to there. Again, more and more trouble that we've been through. From one to the other. We've got to the stage where through us has been satisfied the prophecy, the avda chachmat chachamav, that the wisdom of the wise has been lost. Why? The azlad yad haTorah v'lomdeh, and the Torah itself and those who learn it have begun to dwindle. Kilona sit haTorah kebet Torah. The Torah has not become like 2 Torahs, which is what they were worried about with Shammai, with Bet Shammai and Bet Hillel. Elika Torah ein mispar, but it's been turned into innumerable Torahs. There are so many different svarim, so many different opinions, so many different deot, so many different ideas floating around, and everybody is a refugee. That's the point. People didn't have that Masorah. If you take a snapshot of Judaism in, let's say, the year 1250, so it's a relatively stable picture. The Sfarim have been in Spain for 500 years, and the Ashkenazim have been in Northern Europe for 500 years. And people have this sense of Masorah. In the years between, let's say, the 13th century, the late 13th century, and the early 16th century, the Jews were completely upended. And now you look at, take a snapshot of Jewry when he was a young man, let's say in 1515, there are Sfaradim and Ashkenazim all mixed together. There are people who used to live in different parts of Spain. Don't think the Sfaradim were just one homogenous group. There was Leon, and there was Aragon, and there was Navarre, and there was Castilla and Catalonia. They had different kind of Masorahs. And now everyone's all mushed together in the same towns, together with a few Ashkenazim, and da-da-da-da. So we don't have any sense of clarity in Torah. Fine. Two, the second paragraph. Still in the first source. And if you tell me, well, why do you care? Go through everything in the Gemara, start from scratch, go through the whole process, the haposkim kulam, go through all the poskim. So it's going to be very hard. It's going to be very tough for people to get an understanding of halacha if they have to go from square one through the Gemara, all the poskim. You know, this is 1,000 years after the Gemara. There's a lot of water under the bridge between now and then. And therefore, third paragraph. Alkei, ani adal ba'alpi Yosef ben Moreno Arav Ephraim ben Moreno Rav Yosef Karo. So me, who am I, the smallest in my tribe, Yosef Karo. And by the way, it's nothing to do with Cairo. He never went to Cairo. If Cairo means from the word yakar, means special, precious, etc. Okay, kinesi la Hashem tzivakot. I have decided to be zealous for God. V'ni'arti chatani l'sakel ha'masileh. I've decided to pave a new path. V'hiskamti l'chabes sefer. I've decided to write a book. All the dinim which are relevant, practical halacha, meaning I'm not going the way of the Rambam and writing a complete compendium of every halachic issue that ever came up. I'm not going to try and do that, just practical halacha. That's why the Shulchan Aruch, when it later came, opens up with get up in the morning, wash your hands, make brachas, as opposed to the Rambam, who opens up with Yisodei HaTorah, the principles of Hashkafa. No, practical Judaism. Okay? But Be'ashor Shayim, I'm going to explain where they came from, Motze'eim, and where they go to, Me'a Gemara. I'm going to go through the Gemara for you. Im Kolchi Luki Svaras Va'apoiskim Ishla Nader. I'm not leaving anybody out. Now, V'lo Ra'iti La'asot Sefer Zeh Chibu B'fnei Atzmo. I didn't want to write this as a self-standing book. Because I'm going to have to then write everything in that came before me. I'd much prefer to write it as a commentary on an existing book. So I'm going to write it as a commentary around the edge. Good. Now, if you were going to write it as a commentary, if you were the Mechal, if you were Rabbi Yosef Karo in the early 1500s, writing a commentary on another halachic sefer as a base, what would you pick? Who is the king? The Rambam. Peter Rambam. He's the Sfaradi. Fine. The Alabadati Samachu B'Sefer HaRambam. And of course I immediately thought I'll write it on the Rambam. Liyot HaPosek HaYotem Fur Samba Olam. Because the Rambam is the lead posek in the whole world. He's the most well-known, the best-known posek in the world. You will see that the Rambam bias in the Shulchan Aruch raised certain concerns later on. Okay? The Chazar Tibi, but I changed my mind. I decided on a different course. Why? He only brings one opinion. Whose opinion? His own. No, another opinion. I would have had to do a lot of work bringing other opinions in. So I decided to base it on the Arba Turim, which was written by Rabbi Yaakov, the son of the Rosh, Ben HaRosh, written in the early 1300s, about 200 years earlier. I've decided to go on the Torah. And if you open the Torah, you'll see the Torah already brings a number of key positions. He brings the Rambam and his father, the Rosh, and he often brings Rashi and Tosfos and the Ramban and the Rashba. So there's a good bedrock to build it on. Great. Paragraph number 4. Nimtza. So it's going to turn out, someone who is going to have my book in front of them, this is a list, it's not even a full list, of who you're going to be dealing with. Divrei HaTalmud. I'm going to read this through really fast. Divrei HaTalmud. These are all the. It's like this sort of Bar-Ilan CD 500 years earlier of collected all of. No one's ever seen this before. Divrei HaTalmud in Perush Rashi, Tosfos, Haran, Piskei HaRif, Harosh, HaMordechai, HaRambam, VaHaGotav. Magid Mishnah, Rabbeinu Yeruchim, Sefer HaTrumah, Shibali HaLeket, VaHaRokech, VaShari Dura, VaSefer HaTashbetz, VaSefer HaItzu, VaNimukei Yosef, Smag, Orchus Chaim, VaTorus Abayis, VaGos HaSheri, VaSefer HaManig, VaHaEger, VaSefer Bali Nefesh El HaRaivad, VaTshuvas HaRosh, VaRashba, VaHarid, Ben Sheches, VaRed Meshima Bar Tzemach, UMari Kolon, VaTrumas HaDeshen, Kol Divrei Mavurim Heitzev. I'm going to collect all of those manuscripts. Nothing was printed. A few tubers were printed, but not much. Printing was invented just a few decades earlier. He's going to go around collecting all of these manuscripts. He's going to organize them. He's going to take out all of the relevant bits to this halacha, and he's going to present them. And then he adds a very interesting line: "Ubiktzat mekamot," and in a few places, Ma'amari has Zohar. I'm going to throw in a few Zohars as well. That's a whole shir. How the Zohar begins to be introduced into the halachic system. But you can see from that list that he's going to do something encyclopedic that no one's ever done before. Collect it all, put all the manuscripts together, extract all the relevant positions on all these issues that he's going through halachically, and present them to you. It's unbelievable. The fifth paragraph, which I'm not going to read inside, he says, the one that starts in with the brackets, he says, and I hope you'll excuse me if I don't bring every single Ashkenazi opinion, because let's face it, he said, they always more or less say the same thing as each other. But he says, just excuse me if I do that, which already you can see already a Bruegger's building there. And in the sixth paragraph, where it says, V'alabadati, and I decided, of course, there's no point just presenting opinions. I'm going to rule in halacha. And then you see where he's coming from at the end of that line. Lios lanu Torah achas u'mishpat echad. Because now we need one Torah, one ruling. We're living in a post-Ashkenazi Sephardi world. The Sephardim have been expelled. There is no Sephard. It's gone. The Ashkenazim have been going round and around and around for the last 200 years, expelled from this principality to this place, England and France are countries. They've thrown them out long before. But all the tiny little principalities, which now are Germany and around there, they'd been wandering from one to the other. Every time they owed money, they got thrown out, etc. And eventually they'd gone to the only place left for the Ashkenazim to go, which was east, which was basically the equivalent of Mongolia, as far as we're concerned, which is Poland and Lithuania. Lithuanian non-Jews were still worshipping trees when the Jews went there. But they went there. So he says, nobody is in any kind of normal situation, so we need a post-Ashkenazi Sephardi world. We need one law to bind them all, and that's going to be mine. And if I'm going to try and prove Talmudically with based on different opinions and analysis what the halakha should be, says this has all been done already. Tosfos, the Ramban, the Rashba, they are extremely analytical the way they go through the halachic analysis. Of course, the Ramban inherited a lot of the methodology from Tosfos. There was a lot of crossover. And therefore he says, I'm not going to do that. Who's going to add to that? Who can compete with that? I'm going to compete with that. He didn't consider himself even close to the same level to produce his own interpretation. Who's going to stick his head in? Harayel, between the mountains of God, I'm going to bring proofs. I'm going to conclude what they were trying to work out. I'm going to decide what they didn't decide. How can we do that? Our brains have been mushed. It's like post-COVID, you know? We can't even think straight anymore. Laughing the rain, we can hardly even understand what they said. And to be clever to them? So don't expect me to contradict and make my own analysis. Well, not only that. Even if we wanted to, even if we could do this, start reanalyzing. It's just going to take us so long. We just got no ability to do this in terms of the intellect, in terms of the time, etc. Seventh paragraph, three from the bottom. Ulechein, therefore, I've come up with a new chidush. Ulechein iskanti bedati ki lihiyosh shlosha amudei haora. I've decided to take three pillars of ruling. Asher habayit beit Yisrael nishan aleihem behorosehem. Who do the Jewish people rely on for their psak? Halacha, halohema. They are the following: Harif, Harambam, the Harosh. They are the three greatest of the greats. The Rif, Rav Yitzchak Alfasi from North Africa in the 11th, 12th century. The Rambam from Spain, North Africa in the 12th, 13th century. And the Rosh from Europe and then from Germany, who then went to Spain when he ran away from the massacres, the Rindfleisch massacres and other massacres in Europe. He went to Toledo and he lived in Spain for the rest of his life. They are the three big poskim. Amarti alibi, and I said to myself, Shibamokam shishnai mehem maskimim ledat achad. When two of them agree on the same thing, nifsak halacha kamaisam, that's a majority. Two out of three, that's great. Im loy b'mikzas v'kaima shekol chachmi Yisrael arubam cholkin al hada'at ha'hu. Unless there's a consensus in the Jewish people that that's not a view that we follow, but generally speaking, I'm going to paskin like two out of three. I suppose if you get three out of three, it's like, you know, three cherries in Vegas, and you, it's jackpot. But if you get two out of three, he says, that's good enough for me. Two out of three, follow the majority. Acharei rabim lahatzos, that's great. I'm paskining like that. Penultimate paragraph. B'makam she'echad min gimel ha'amudim, when one of these three pillars, haniskan, which I've mentioned, lo gila da'atzo bedin ahu, didn't reveal his view, so I'm left with two. V'hashnei amudim hanisharim cholkim b'davar, and the two that I'm left with are in dispute with each other. Hinei, then I'll turn to everybody else. Haramban, Harashba, Haran, v'hamordechai, v'hasmag lefaneinu. Then we can look around, find a broader consensus. El makom hashiyeh shama haruach ruach iluin kedishin alechet neilet. We'll go where the ruach of God takes us. We'll create a consensus with all these other opinions, and we'll do something like that. But that's how I'm going to do it. That's how I'm going to paskin. Last paragraph. V'to'elet sefer zeh lechachamim uvo'ar. And if you're intelligent, you'll understand exactly why this book will help you. Ula boichrim b'kitzer zeh hayaderech aruko kitzara. And we'll see that you people, this is the short, long road. This will get you where you need to go. V'ashe'ein bo koch la'amod ya'ein bo. Anyone who's unable to do this themselves will look into it. L'havin, to understand kavanos divrei hamachaber sefer arba turim. It'll help you on the tour as well. It'll help you understand the tour. Nimsa she'sefer zeh mazon l'kula bay. This is mazon for everybody else. This is food. I'm giving you the food of Torah. Al-kein karasi bet Yosef. That's why I've called it the bet Yosef. Ki kashem shemi bet Yosef. Hayu nizunim hakol mazon haguf. Just like Yosef was hamashpir, he provided all of the food for all of the Jews that needed it at the time, his family. Kach ye nizunim misefer zeh mazon hanefesh. This is going to give you all of your sustenance from the bet Yosef, because his name is Yosef, and Shalom al Yisrael. Okay, good. We did that quite quickly, and you can go back and read it in your own time. What time are we finished here? 6:45? Okay, well, I'm not going on that long. Okay, fine. So we'll get this done. Now, what I want to show you is the reaction. The reaction to the Bet Yosef. Because there was, you know, it was an unbelievable work. It was a totally novel idea to draw together this in an encyclopedic way. And then, of course, what he did at the end of this process, when he was already living in Israel, he moved to Israel. By the way, there's an amazing story, which is brought down in the Shlah, of how they made Aliyah, this group of rabbis. They were together for Tikkun El Shavuos in, I think it was Adrianople, in the Turkish Ottoman Empire. And they were all together learning Mishnayos. They had a very big Mishnayos focus of learning Mishnayos as a Chabura. And in the middle of this sort of Tikkun Leil Shavuot, Rabbi Yosef Karo was overcome by the Magid, who later spoke to him many, many times through his mouth. And he starts going into kind of a different mode and the Magid starts speaking through him. And it's recorded. They're all sitting there like in awe of Shlomo Alevi Alkabetz and the others. And this suddenly he's overtaken by the spirit who starts speaking and basically said to them, what is your problem, guys? Why aren't you making Aliyah? Get on with it. Go to Israel. It's the road is open. Get there now and get there as soon as you can, etc. And they were so excited. After this first experience, they had, of course, second night Shavuos, because they were in Chutz La'aretz, and they said, let's do it again, let's try and make it. And they did. and they learned the Mishnayos again. They got their Mishnayos to put them in like a trance. Later on in this, with the Ari as well, with the Arizal, they often learned Mishnayos in a way that they could actually start to commune with the individual opinion in the Mishnah and connect with them. Mishnayos became an incredibly mystical experience. It's very, very interesting. And they got this voice again, Kenan, come on guys, make Aliyah. And they did. They all went to live in Israel. Okay, fine.
It's not commune with the author.
Yes, with the original opinion in the Mishnah.
Actual,
yes, yes. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Akiva. It became like a portal, like a wormhole through this Mishnah for them to actually connect with this. If you're interested in this, you should read the Magid Meisharim, which are the notes that the Bet Yosef made of his conversations with the Magid throughout his life. It makes phenomenal reading. It's like a bit disturbing at times, but it's very, very, very interesting. Even more disturbing is Rav Chaim Vital's dream diaries, which are like phenomenal. Okay, but that's another story. That's not for now. Now, number two. Comes along the Maharshach. Who's the Maharshach? Rav Shlomo HaKohen of Salonika. Not someone I'd ever heard of, honestly, until I prepared this shir. And he comes along and he says a very interesting thing. Number two. Ta'afat pishakatzav Rav Gadol Marena Rav Yosef Karo. Even though he's come up with this idea that you follow two out of three for the Rif, the Rosh, and the Rambam. Very nice. But I've heard that lots of people are not happy with this. I'll often psakse. How can you pass like this? This is how he goes through his whole book. He finds these three opinions and two out of three, check. Two out of three, do that, that's good. Wherever the Rif and the Rambam agree, he says, okay, that's how we're going to paskin. Afilu yes for us, I'm neged harosh. Even though they go against the Rosh. The Kamar Abasa and many other people. Bein lahakel, bein lahachmim. He said, I'm not trying to be mekel or machmir. I'm just trying to say, you can't just go with the Rif and the Rambam. Apart from anything else, the Rif and the Rambam hardly ever disagree with each other. You've weighted the dice. The Rambam says, I only disagree with the Rif 80 times. That's nothing out of 1,000 chapters of Mishnah Torah. So you basically decided you're passing it like the Rambam. Oh, it's the majority of the Rif and the Rambam? Come on, it's the Rambam, basically. It's the same. And what about the Rosh? What happened to the Rosh? What about the Rosh and all his rabbis? The Nosev Aleihim Rashi. What about Rashi? This was a Sephardi posik in Salonika. Why is he so excited about Rashi? We'll see. Lav katle kami ba'agmininhu. That's a bit of humor there. I mean, in the Gemara it says, you know, was your rabbi a reed cutter in the swamp? Meaning they weren't exactly slouches. All the Rosh, you just ignore them. Mi yakel rosh nigdam. I don't know if that's a play on words. You know, who can be light-hearted, light-headed in front of them? Lahati is the Torah. You're going to say something is mutter when the Rosh and all these others say it's also. Especially with us, ki harosh haya rabam shel Sfaradim. That's a really interesting statement. Meaning, if we think of the Rif and the Rambam as Sfaradim, we think of the Rosh as Ashkenazi, no? He's from Germany. He spent two-thirds of his life in Ashkenaz. And then he ran for his life and spent the last third of his life in Spain. This is a Rav from Salonika who is saying, the Rosh is a Sfaradi posek. We go like the Rosh. The Rosh became an institutionalized posek in Sfarad. And he says, I think our Rebbe, the Rosh, and his Rebbeim, who happen to be Ashkenazim, but that's not the point, are being overlooked in this new book. They're being sidelined. Because we're going always like the Rif and the Rambam. People sometimes say, the Shulchan Aruch threw in the Rosh into his triumvirate in order to, you know, throw a bone to the Ashkenazim. But it could be that he's not even thinking about the Ashkenazim, because the Rosh is a Sfaradi posek. He's trying to make an Iberian consensus between the Rambam and the Rif, who were the Psak in Aragon, and the Rosh, who was the Psak in Castilia. And therefore, the Rosh is not the Ashkenazi here. And here we have a Sfaradi rabbi saying he feels his own Masorah of the Rosh has been overlooked too much. So that's one problem that they had. So even some of the Sfaradim were unhappy. If you were a Rambam person, you were over the moon. You know, I'm sure the Yemenites were very happy with it, although, you know, I don't have a source here, but it was basically the Rambam. I brought you in number three, Rav Yosef ibn Ezra. I don't know if he's a relation of Rav Avraham ibn Ezra, but this was 400 years later anyway. So Rav Yosef ibn Ezra, basically, you can see, you can read this on your own. I don't want to run out of time. He says, look, he's oversimplified things. You get the impression when you read the Bet Yosef that, like, oh, everyone agrees on this issue. But when you go looking a little bit further, you see there's a lot of issues he just doesn't cover. I mean, how can he? It's already encyclopedic. You just can't get to the level of detail that you need to get to if you're really going to paskin halacha. Especially in momonos. Because in monetary law, he said, it's absolutely critical you know all of the opinions, because then you can say kimli. Kimli means you can go to a beis din, and when someone says you owe money, you can say, no, kimli, I follow this view in momonos, which means I don't owe you money. I'm otzi mechavero alav araya. You have to prove that the halacha is not like that. He says, you can't fudge these issues. And the Shulchan Aruch is a bit of a fudge. It oversimplifies things in a way that we need. He says it's a fantastic book. Don't get me wrong. It's amazing. It's incredible. How can you even question it? But it's too oversimplified. It cannot bring the level of detail that you really need. That was one other issue.
Why don't you bring all the commentaries in the paragraph 4 then, if he's completely ignoring them? Except when
he doesn't completely ignore them.
Only when in the situation you describe, when there's a dispute between the Rambam and the Rish.
Yeah, I think he's saying that even with all of those authorities, there are people that are not there. I mean, he made a very comprehensive list, but you can't include everybody. And there are people that just didn't make it into even the analysis, because you could just, the book is already, as long as it is, you could break it 10 times longer. I'm not, and also, because I think he's not just complaining about the psak, that was the first source. I think he's complaining that he just doesn't cover in enough detail all the specifics with the detail that you need to make a sensible psak in a beis din, because there's just things that have been overlooked, oversimplified and overlooked.
Sorry, can I just ask?
Well, yes.
I always wondered how, I mean, they were fleeing from place to place. They probably just had a change of clothes and they didn't have books till
right.
Until printing became more commonplace. How did the tradition continue?
They had manuscripts, thousands and thousands and thousands of manuscripts.
They
weren't always running for their lives. It's an interesting question to say what the Jews managed to get out of Spain when they left Spain. I don't think they were not given one day's notice that they had to leave. They were given many months' notice that they had to leave. They had a choice. They could stay and become Christians. They could leave and take some stuff with them. And they took whatever they took. It's a good question, historically. I don't know Rabbi Ephraim Kanefogel, please, like, what level of success did they have in preserving manuscripts?
Yes.
There's no question a lot was lost.
How much of the tradition we rely on because of
so that's where you get into Hashgacha, meaning the 24 wagon loads of manuscripts that were burnt in France by the church. There were many commentaries there that were burned that were never recovered. Views and opinions in halacha that we lost forever. And at a certain point you have to say, well, look, that's just how it is. I mean, you know, if every rabbi had just worked this little bit harder at thinking of a solution, maybe we'd have come up with a lot more. Yeah, but that's what they did and that's what we have and that's what they were able to do. So there's a certain point at which you turn around and say, well, just Hashgacha has directed that we ended up with that but not with that. This became a big discussion about the Meiri, when they discovered the Meiri's manuscripts in the Vatican. Through the 18th, 19th, and mostly 20th century. The Meiri's from Spain in the 1300s. The question is, do they now rejoin the canon of Rishonim, because no one ever saw them before, but now we've rediscovered them? And there were those, the Chazonish in particular, who said, no, if they were not available at the time to the people, they're not relevant now. The fact that you've found a whole bunch of new manuscripts is not relevant in halacha, which is actually very interesting. There was a debate between Rav Schneur Lyman and someone called Rav Tzvi Cohen, I think, in the pages of tradition about 40 years ago. If we found, this is very interesting, if we found a Sefer Torah, which said, I wrote this, I'm Moshe Rabbeinu, I was here, this is my Sefer Torah, and there's no question about it, it's absolutely 1,000% a valid, authenticated as an archaeological Sefer Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu, and it didn't say the same thing exactly that our Sefer Torah said, would we change our Sefer Torah to match that or not? And Rav Shlia Lyman said, well, of course we would. Why would we not change it? And the other fellow, I think he was Shri Cohen, said, absolutely not. It's irrelevant. Completely irrelevant. Yeah, but it's Moshe Rabbeinu's handprint on it. Irrelevant. Irrelevant. Because what we don't have, and we don't need, and we don't take account of, because that's the way that the kind of zerim, the stream of halacha went. Which is, it's part of Lo B'Shamayim. Very interesting. Now, the Ramah. The Ramah of Moshe Isserles. Moshe Isserles woke up in Poland in around about the same time, a little bit eight later. He was much younger than the Bet Yosef, and said, you know something? We ought to have a book that covers everything, because everyone's a refugee, etc., just like we said before. And he discovered in the middle of producing that book, that the Bet Yosef had already produced his book. And of course, the Bet Yosef sent his book off for printing. I used to say, erroneously, that the only printing press in Israel was in Sfat, down the road from him, and therefore he got it printed there. I later found out that he didn't, because the Sfat printing press opened later, and he sent it to Venice, which was the very, you know, the fancy printing press. It was the Magid, or, you know, of the day, and he got it printed there. But people had a copy of this book. So the Ramah was given a copy of the Bet Yosef, and one of his students gave it to him and said to him, "Look, Rebbe, this is your kind of book." And he looked at it and he said, "This is not my kind of book. This is my book. Someone else has written my book and has published it before me." And he was very down, you know, disheartened, and he didn't know what to do. And eventually he looked at it more carefully and he said, "Okay, you know something? We're going to have to work with this." And he wrote to Rav Yosef Karo in Israel. He said, "I'm Moshe Isserles." He was in his 30s in Krakow. And he said, "Look, I've been working on the same project, but I have a few questions, etc., on the way you've done this." And he writes in his introduction to the Darchei Moshe, which in number 4... I've given you an extract. The whole thing is written in rhyming prose. And when you, it escaped me when I read little bits of it, but then I saw the whole thing and I realized you have to almost sing it. People used to write in rhyming prose. It's like amazing that the whole thing rhymes. Anyway, so I'm just going to bring out 2 or 3 lines. And he attacks, respectfully, the Bet Yosef approach. So have a look. Look in there when I've underlined in number 4, about 4 or 5 lines in. And he writes about how amazing the book is and how he relies on these 3 amudim of psak, etc. But he doesn't follow everybody else. The Av Kihem Kamai V'loi Batrai. And even though these 3, the Rif, the Rambam, the Rosh, are earlier and not later Rishonim, as it were. V'lo Chash L'dvarim Shetzavchu Bo Kamai De Kamai. He doesn't listen to the instructions of the earliest of the earlies, which is the Rif. The Haloi Harif, but doesn't the Rif Shepasak Soif Perik Be De Erevin? The Hiskimu Ime Rabim Imo Rabim, and the Rif and many others agree with him. Lifsok Halacha B'chol Makom Kebatrai. We have a principle: is that we favor the later authorities within that stratum of psak over the earlier ones, because the later ones had the experience of seeing the earlier ones and could update that to, you know, present technology and circumstances, and therefore we always go with the later ones. And therefore his problem with the Bet Yosef is not just that it was massively over-Sfardied, the Rif, the Rambam, and the Rosh, who's treated as a Sfardi, but it was all people from the 1300s, the 1200s and before. And we're sitting now in 1540. It says, what's happened from 1250 to now? Oh, it's all chopped liver. It didn't just kind of, there wasn't just like a gaping black hole between the middle of the 13th century and the middle of the 16th century. It says that's not okay. For lo lachush ledivrei kamai. Okay, shouldn't we go like the later ones and not follow the earlier ones? Afilu b'makom harav etzel haTalmid. Even Rav and Talmid will prefer the Talmid over the Rav, because the later authority has the perspective the early one doesn't. V'kein pasku achronim tamid. That's how we always paskim. U'berishonam, borosham, rather, maharik, mahari. He brings the 14th and 15th century poskim. Mahari kolon, the maharik, the maharivail. He says, you can't just ignore these people. You've just ignored them. And therefore, his problem with the Bet Yosef was not only that it was too Ashkenaz, too Sephardi, but that also that it had failed to take account of the more recent authorities. It's actually very interesting where you feel that the Rishonim ended. Meaning, the Bet Yosef may have felt that the Rishonim was over earlier than the Ramah felt that the Rishonim was over. Where are you going to draw that line? Because in Spain, 1391... was a bit of a light. After 1390, that was like their Kristallnacht. From 1391 to 1492, everything is becoming a real disaster zone. And it could be that he felt that really the Ran was the last of the major poskim he could go with. Even the Black Death, before the Black Death and after the Black Death, that may be a kind of a cut-off point. So exactly where the Rishonim end and the Achronim begin, the Ramah felt it needed to be later. So, well, of course, we know what he did. He wrote to the Bet Yosef, and he said, can I insert some of my comments in your Shulchan Aruch and write my own? And they agreed. And, of course, now the Shulchan Aruch has, wherever the Ramah feels that the Ashkenazi approach was different, which is not most of the time, he puts it in. However, the most significantly critical response was from a group of Ashkenazim from the same period as the Beit Yosef, who were completely aghast at the whole concept of what the Beit Yosef did. And I brought you here the Yamshel Shlomo, which is the important one, and the other ones I'll leave you to read a little bit on your own. But look with me in number 5. Says the Yamshel Shlomo, Rav Shlomo Luria, distant cousin of Rav Yitzchak Luria, the Arizal. Shlomo Luria was a colleague of the Ramah. I think he was a relative of the Ramah, also in Poland, in the mid to late 1500s. So the Ramah has basically accepted the methodology of the Shulchan Aruch and just kind of Ashkenazied it up a bit and put some later authorities in, and they've agreed to settle on that. So it says the Yamshel Shlomo number 5. Ki chadash mikarov bali yadenu sefer v'chibur she'asa mahari karo. We've received this new book that Rav Yosef Karo has written, Al HaTorim, on the Torah. And he's shown us a number of chidushim, misvarim akadmonim, from the older books, shelo hayi biyadenu biyamim shavru, and we didn't have all these manuscripts before. Like, what? Kol hakavod, you've brought all these manuscripts together. Utshuvot nachriyot, sorry, strange tshuvot, or tshuvot that are not a bit foreign to us. The chidushim asher nimtzu b'chol hasvarim, and a new chidushim. I'm not sure he's being overly critical there, but he is saying you're bringing in a lot of material that we were not dealing with. He didn't leave anything out. What can you say against this? I mean, how can you criticize this? Aval. Of course, everything's going to change in the aval. Asap sharot. He made compromises. Be'inyani piske halacha, when it comes to how to rule in halacha. Mida'ato, from his own mind. U'misvarat hakeres. That's not polite. What's the svaras hakeres? Gut, literally, boich svaras. You get, we're going to do that? That's not how it works. Beroiv pamim be'isav heta negida kabbalah ashe kibalnu. And it goes against our tradition usually. V'negdo shal v'nahagu adhena. What we've been following up until now. And now he says, v'hatalmidim, and the young talmidim now, holchim achad varavu psakah. They follow this Beit Yosef. V'lo yadu shebenafsham hu, and they don't know how dangerous it is. Shehu ichriya kama pa'amim neged ha-tosfus, he often decides against tosfus, v'ha poskim asher anu noagim lifsok kevasayu, and the poskim that we follow. V'hine shagu b'zeh, and they've made a big me'era, these young people. Me'acha shirao shekein kosov b'sifroi, they see something written in his book, shekach halacha, that this is the halacha. Amru, and they say, what do they say? Kach kosov hakaro lahedya. It's an explicit Shulchan Aruch. And that's a terrible thing. They believe something because it's written in a book. Who would quote a book and say, well, he wrote that, it must be true? It's a ridiculous thing to say. Why would you do that? And if somebody alive, not just relying on this book, and they cry out like a kind of stork, that this Shulchan Aruch is not correct, and they bring clear proofs, or I feel a Kabbalah, or a tradition that they have. Lo yachish l'dvarav. No one takes account. No one listens to this person complaining. Ka'asha kasafti b'hagdama rishona, like I've written in my earlier piece. U'beprat ha'idna. And now he gets a bit cynical. Especially today, he says, oh, today everyone's a chochem. Sheba avoynos harabim. Because for our many sins, hanismachim merubim. Lots of people have smicha. V'haloim din me'utim. But not many people have any knowledge. Lots of rabbis around. And how are they rabbis? They just get it out of the Shulchan Aruch. Umishum hachi, because of that, toivsim divrei ha-sefer. That's why they love the sefer. Hashem matzu boi kol ha-chidushim, because it's all done for them. Ubezeh hushvu ha-ketanim le-gedoilim. And now you can be one of the gedoilim, you can be one of the ketanim. It's all the same, because you can just pass it out of the Shulchan Aruch. V'hanarim le-zekenim. And you can be an elder, or you can be a young fool, and you can look clever, because you quote the Shulchan Aruch. He says, that's not how it is. Number 6. The loizah derech, that is not our way. The loizah ha'ir, that is not our path. Ki mi yamos ravinu, ravina v'ravashi. From the days of ravina v'ravashi, when the Gemara was closed, was sealed, Ein kabbalah lifsoika echad mena ga'onim. We don't follow any one opinion. We don't follow opinions. Or mina achronim, whether the early ones, whether the later ones. Elami sheyichshru dvarav. We have to prove who's right. Liyosam yusadim b'moifet. You have to bring proof from the Gemara. Mofe chotech al pi haTalmud. V'hayirushalmi v'hatosefta b'makom she'ein hachrab Talmud. Meaning, how do we pass in halacha? You become a Talmudic genius. and you work it out based on the Talmud and the other Chazalic sources. And if you can't do that, then you ask someone who can. But you don't go to a book that summarizes everything and then quote from that book. It's just a complete breach of every halachic principle as to how halacha is meant to work. It's meant to be responsive. It's meant to be, you know, to some degree flexible, develop, etc. None of that will happen if you pass it from the Shulchan Aruch. And I brought you in number 7, number 8, number 9. I brought you from the Marashah. I brought you from the Bach. All contemporaries in the late 15, early 1600s basically says, if you look here, in the Bach in number 8, he says, "Amorim b'Torah shaloika halacha." These people are teaching halacha which is not according to the halacha. He calls them in the Marashah, calls them a vale oilam, like when the Gemara says about people who just pass from the Mishnah without looking at the Gemara, they're mavale oilam, they're destroying the world. He says people who pass from the Shulchan Aruch are just destroying the world. That's not the world of Pesach. That's not how it is. And I brought you in number 10, which I'm not going to read inside because we've read a lot. The Maharal says that Pesach has to come from a process of analysis. And it's better, it's an amazing statement, it's better for a Talmud Chacham to go through the Gemara, analyze it, and come to a Pesach that's wrong than someone Paskin from the Shulchan Aruch that's right. Because the process is critical. The process is essential. And if you don't go through that process, he says, that's just not called halacha. That's called just reading a book. And we don't just read a book. That's not how it works. Very interesting. Yeah, you had a question?
Clashing with AI is something
awful. I mean, you know, AI is...
No, but literally, where we have processes gone out of the window...
Right, yeah. And this has always been a question, and this is a very interesting comparison. Okay, who won this? Who won this debate? Did the Shulchan Aruch become, you know, come out on top, or did all of these other opinions win? What's the answer?
The Shulchan Aruch, followed by all the way through
the Mishnah, did he come across again? Yes and no. Look at page 5. The Shulchan Aruch actually didn't really win, I don't think, because the Shulchan Aruch itself was created as a small book that you just divided into 30, and every day you'd do a little bit of chazara on each one, and you just, it was a book, it was like, you know, it's in your pocketbook. Okay? What does the Shulchan Aruch look like now? We've turned it back into the Gemara. We couldn't win the argument head on and just get rid of the Shulchan Aruch, so we've just turned the Shulchan Aruch back into the Shas. And all of the analysis and the argument we did, the Rav Yosef Karo would be appalled to see that this is what happened to his Shulchan Aruch. This is not what it was meant to be. It was meant to be one sack for everybody, simple, da 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 da. And we've just turned it back into the Gemara. Shkoyach.
In the same way that Maimonides would be a little bit troubled by the fact that the Mishnah Torah is not very short.
Yeah, it could also be. Although it could be that, you know, he didn't mean that to be a sack for everybody, just a summary of the Gemara. It depends on what his intention was. The Shulchan Aruch intended to pass him for all of Klal Yisrael. I'm not sure the Rambam intended to pass him for all of Klal Yisrael. That's an interesting question. Almost every single one of these commentaries on the back here from a standard Shulchan Aruch, almost everyone is an Ashkenazi. Interesting. It's not just because I have an Ashkenazi Shulchan Aruch. I mean, there are obviously Sephardi poskim, and who gets put on the page is sometimes a little bit random based on who the printers put on the page, but it's very interesting that we basically re-Talmudified the Shulchan Aruch, and you know, what we do now is in every generation, we produce our own revised Shulchan Aruchs. Every new Sefer, you know, from Al Scroll and Feldheim and Magid and this one and Rav Melamed, and it's just new Shulchan Aruchs again and again, because we know that in 30 years someone's going to come along and do a new update, and that's fine. There's no more the Shulchan Aruch. There's halachic guides for each generation, and we've basically realized that you can't just have one sack for everyone. I mean, apart from the fact that 500 years later Mashiach did not come. I think Rav Yosef Karo would be more upset about that, actually. That in the 1530s, I think it was unthinkable that the 2020s would come along and we'd still be having this discussion. That would have been very disheartening for him, I think. But in the end, the Shulchan Aruch ended up being assimilated into the general consensus of Jewish, discussion, and which I think is a very interesting result.
You have the view that you have to have a very good reason not to follow the Shulchan Aruch.
You have to have a very good reason. It's interesting. I mean, depends on who you are. I have to have a very good reason. Rav Moshe Feinstein doesn't have to have a very good reason. It was not always. I mean, there are different approaches on this. Rav Avadu Yosef, yes, absolutely. Mimaran Ab Maran, Rav Beni Lau's PhD thesis was on the halachic methodology of Rav Avadu Yosef, and he's very mishubad to the Bet Yosef. Okay? But the Ashkenazi Poskim are really not very mishubad to the Bet Yosef. And they don't have to have as good a reason for not following the Shulchan Aruch. But Moshe Feinstein feels that the Rishonim point in a different direction, and that is a psak that works better. But you're right. It is a guiding light, but it's not a...
It hasn't frozen the halacha, is what you're saying.
It hasn't frozen the halacha. Absolutely hasn't frozen the halacha. In many ways. Certainly not for the Ashkenazim.
Certainly in Arak Chai, you wouldn't think of reading the Shulchan Aruch without the Mishnah Berurah.
Correct. Correct, you wouldn't think of that. The Mishnah Berurah is from a lot of other places, and from Hasidus, and from Kabbalah, and there's a lot of things that are in there that weren't in there before. And it's an ongoing process, but it's interesting that no one's ever tried quite to do this in the same way since. I think they realize it's not something which is straightforward. All right, that's something to think about. Read the rest of the sources on your own, and there's a lot of very interesting material on this, which if you want more, I'm happy to give you, but let's leave it there because we've done 45 minutes. Thank you for coming to a long day of learning. I hope you felt it was a worthwhile investment of time.